of Christmases Long, Long Ago is my new book, arriving for the 2025 Christmas season. Find out what Christmas was like centuries ago. Sneak preview, it was weird, and spooky, and rowdy, kind of gross sometimes. Find it wherever books are sold, in hardcover from Lions Press, and audiobook from Recorded Books. It's Christmas as you've never seen it before, and it makes a great gift. I'm Brian Earle. This is Christmas Past. The televisions were on that Christmas Eve. That was nothing new. Television had become part of Christmas decades earlier. Families gathered around flickering RCA consoles and Boston brownstones, the picture snowy, but the moment clear. In Kansas farmhouses, the glow of the TV flashing blue frames on the wall. On the south side of Chicago, three generations squeezed onto a plaid sofa, watching a grainy image crawl across the screen. In suburban ranch homes, the news came through the static. Earlier that year, they had gathered around those same sets to watch reports that the Tet Offensive had erupted in Vietnam. They had watched, stunned, as a Memphis balcony became a shrine to Martin Luther King, and again as Robert Kennedy collapsed in a hotel ballroom in Los Angeles. They had watched footage of riots in Chicago and Berkeley, of student uprisings in France, and tanks rolling into Prague. In October, hundreds were gunned down in a plaza in Mexico City. 1968 was a year that felt like it might split history in two, a fault line cracking through time itself. But now, on Christmas Eve, nearly a third of humanity tuned in to something different. 1 billion people watched the transmission come through. Grainy, delayed by distance, but unmistakable. The voices of three men drifting into dens and living rooms. Three men who had traversed afar, farther than anyone had ever gone, and who were delivering a message 240,000 miles from home. Apollo 8 wasn't supposed to go to the moon, not at first. Originally, it was a test flight meant to remain in Earth orbit, a trial run for a lunar module that would eventually land on the moon. But the lunar module was behind schedule, and the decade was almost out. President Kennedy promised that before the decade is out, we'd land a man on the moon and bring him back safely. The clock was ticking, so NASA changed course. George Lowe, the manager of the Apollo Spacecraft Program office, proposed something radical. Why not skip the lunar module entirely? Instead, Apollo 8 would fly to the moon, orbit it, and return, testing deep space communications, navigation, and the performance of the Saturn V rocket in a lunar environment. Along the way, they would photograph the moon's surface, scouting for potential landing sites. It was audacious, risky. Even now, with the benefit of hindsight, it's hard to overstate what they attempted. A journey into the darkness, into the unknown. On December 21, 1968, Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders became the first humans to leave Earth's orbit. They traveled nearly 240,000 miles. Three men cradled in a capsule against the coldest void imaginable. They would orbit the moon once every 2 hours, 10 orbits in total. The first human eyes ever to see the far side of the moon. And then, another thing never seen by human eyes. From behind the moon, they couldn't see the Earth. But as they came round, the Earth appeared, rising over the moon's horizon. A glowing marble of white, green, and blue suspended in a black sky. A grand oasis in the vastness. It was Anders who grabbed the camera. The photograph he took, Earthrise, is now one of the most famous in history. A picture of home, a picture of our planet's beauty and isolation in space. From lunar orbit on Christmas Eve, they could see the whole planet at once, a waxing gibbous suspended in the void, weather systems waltzing across oceans, no borders except the ones drawn naturally by the continents themselves. The Terminator line, where day meets night, sweeping down the curve of the Earth like the hem of a velvet cloak. From space, the only visible trace of humans are the faintest pinpricks of light of cities at night, a constellation of their own making. And then those lights turn off, city by city, as night gives way to day, as places rotated into daylight. They watched from above as Christmas dawned across the world, touching rooftops in Rome, olive groves in the stone villages of Greece. Morning slid through Khartoum and down the spine of Africa to Cape Town. Further west, night still held Labrador in its grip, the snow-covered forest of Quebec dark and still, while in Caracas, the lights of a tropical city blinked beneath the sky, waiting for the sun to find them. From lunar orbit, it all moved without sound, silent, spinning, small. As the people below awoke on Christmas morning to a new world, one where it was now true that humans have orbited the moon. From the beginning, we have looked up. Before there were telescopes, there were stories. Around desert fires and under stone ceilings, ancient people charted the stars. They gave them names. They told of hunters chasing bears, of gods pouring water from the sky, of twins, scorpions, and ships sailing through heaven. The stars weren't just distant lights. They were maps, calendars, myths. They gave order to chaos. They gave meaning to the dark. And always, always, there was the moon, tugging at oceans, glowing yellow silver in the sky. For most of history, the moon was a place no one would ever go, a mystery, a celestial ornament hanging out of reach. But dreams of space travel didn't stay in the realm of myth. By the 20th century, it took new form through science fiction, pulp comics, radio dramas. Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers, rocket ships painted on lunchboxes. Imagination gave way to calculation, to flight plans, oxygen scrubbers, fuel ratios. The final frontier had become a real destination. And now, on this winter night in 1968, we weren't just telling stories about the moon. We were orbiting it, feeling the pull of its gravity, seeing the dark side of it that had eluded human eyes from the beginning. We thought Apollo 8 was a mission to the moon, but it turned out to be a mirror, and when we looked into it, we saw Earth. That night, December 24, 1968, on their fourth orbit around the moon, Apollo 8 broadcast live to Earth. They spoke about what they were seeing, the lunar surface, the darkness beyond, and then they read. Each astronaut took turns reading from the book of Genesis.
We are now approaching lunar sunrise, and for all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep.
The words drifted from 240,000 miles away, crossing the void, cutting through the static of 1968. Ancient words crossing the newest frontier, bridging the distance between story and science. They ended with this message from Anders.
And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good earth.
In the early hours of Christmas morning, Apollo 8 fired its engine again, leaving lunar orbit and beginning the long return home. When the burn was complete, Lovell radioed, "Please be informed there is a Santa Claus." The message was lighthearted, but it also meant something deeper. They were safe. They were coming home. The gift of their return was already wrapped and on its way. The astronauts splashed down in the Pacific 4 days later. Time magazine named them Men of the Year, and even now people say Apollo 8 saved 1968. Because for all the death and division of that year, there was also this. Three men in a tin can, reading scripture to the world from the dark side of the moon, reminding us that we all live on the same fragile spinning ball, that beneath our differences lies a shared hearth in a common home. Anders would later say, "We came all this way to explore the moon, and the most important thing is that we discovered the Earth." And that photograph, the Earthrise, didn't just inspire awe. It helped launch the environmental movement. It gave shape to a new kind of activism, not for a country or a cause, but for a planet, for a blue and white and green sphere that suddenly seemed small enough to hold in our hands, fragile enough to break. From that distance, there were no borders, no wars, no riots, just the Earth. On Christmas Eve of 1968, we looked back at ourselves. And maybe that's what Christmas has always been about, stepping outside of our own lives, even for a moment, to see things more clearly, to notice what we have and what we've lost and what's still worth saving, to find in the darkest nights reasons to celebrate the light. 1 billion people watched as our world turned slowly beneath a sky full of stars. They watched as three men circled the moon, speaking softly into the dark. They watched and they listened, and for just a moment, one Christmas Eve, the world held its breath. Hey, thanks so much for listening. As I've done in a previous episode this season, I need to give credit where it's due when I borrow a line from one of my favorite writers. There's a line in this story about the TV flashing blue frames on the wall, which is a lyric from one of my favorite songwriters, Elliott Smith. It's from his song, Miss Misery. The Apollo orbit was before my time. I wonder what it would have been like to be glued to the TV on a Christmas Eve for something that wasn't especially Christmassy, and yet, in its own way, kinda was. I'm trying to think of other major world historical events that happened during Christmas time in my life. There was the dissolution of the Soviet Union on Christmas Day in 1991, and the first Christmas during the pandemic of 2020. Well, how about you? Maybe there's some local history you experienced right around Christmas one time. Maybe that's a story worth sharing with the rest of the Christmas Past family. I'll be sharing your Christmas memories in special episodes this season dedicated just to them. All you have to do is record yourself speaking into your phone's voice memo app and send it to christmaspastpodcast@gmail.com. There's still time. Just remember to keep it reasonably short, clean, and family-friendly, and be sure to say your name and where you're from. Christmas Past is produced in wonderful Willow Glen, California, by yours truly, Brian Earle. We had music in this episode from the wonderful C. Diab. His song, You'll Never Come to Dorset, appears on the album Imero from Tonal Union Records. Thank you very much to C. Diab and also to Julie Blake at Aura for making it possible to include the song in this episode. Check this episode's show notes for links to discover more about C. Diab. I hope you've been having a wonderful Christmas season so far. Drop me a line anytime. I always love to hear from you, and I do my best to respond to every message I get. You can send me an email or connect with me on your favorite social media platform. If you don't see me there and you think I should be, get in touch and let me know. And if you're really feeling the Christmas spirit, why not help more people discover this show? It's as simple as telling a friend about it or leaving a rating and review. If you do leave a review, I'll send you a Christmas Past sticker, and a handwritten Christmas card is my way of saying thanks. Reach out for details, and until we meet again, may your days be merry and bright.